KPCW News Time now, 8:15. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Summit County Council meeting tomorrow at the Summit County Courthouse, starting with a going-away lunch for a couple of the council members. In the studio with me to preview the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So they still have a month to go, Claudia McMullen and Tal Adair, but this was just the time to do
it. Yeah, it is. When you start looking at our schedule the rest of the month of December, we only have two more meetings after this meeting this week, and the schedules of the council members, we wanted to make sure that we honored them and got a chance for the staff to thank them and some community members. So this was the day.
Yeah, and it's also we've got a proclamation for an appreciation day.
Absolutely. So yesterday at their budget meeting, the council passed a resolution each for Claudia and for Tal. So it's Tal and Claudia Day on Wednesday.
Okay. Let's see. The council, as you mentioned, did meet Monday to discuss the budget. At this point, do we have the budget plan that will be presented at the public hearing?
Yeah. So we spent a couple hours going over essentially, as we go through our process of briefings with the council over the last month. There's a bunch of questions that we list out as we go along and clarifications as departments and elected officials are questioning some of the recommendations that are made, or the council asks questions. So we went through all of those yesterday and the council gave us either a nod or a shake of the head on whether they wanted to go forward with certain things, and then we bring that back on the 7th for a pre-briefing for the final budget.
Yeah. So did they change anything in your recommended budget?
They changed a couple of things, fairly minor things, but around their priorities. We looked at subscriber solar program through Rocky Mountain Power. And we looked at some changes to my recommendations there. I had recommended that we go full bore and go into it. But with some of the changes that are going on with rooftop solar, I mean, there's a mix of what we want to do in order to get our power covered by solar. We held back a little bit. We're going to look at covering those meters that don't increase our cost of energy over the subscriber period of 3 years. And we'll relook at that as Rocky Mountain Power's look at temporary rates for rooftop solar progress over the next year.
So are you saying if Rocky Mountain Power is successful with its plan to change the structure for rooftop solar, that you would not then?
I don't know the answer to that, but the effort by Rocky Mountain Power to change rates related to rooftop solar certainly it brings uncertainty to what our future looks like on rooftop solar, both on the commercial side and the residential side. So we need to slow down and look at how we're going to progress on our goals with rooftop solar to see how that mixes with other programs that are available.
Yeah. Well, we do know that subscriber solar is more expensive.
It is. It depends on the meter and the use. And that's essentially what the conversation was about yesterday. So some of our lower use meters that aren't covered by rooftop solar right now, we're gonna go after those, it looks like, and convert those and then take a look again during the 18 budget process to see where we need to go next.
All right. The Camas building, had you planned to put rooftop solar up on those?
We did, and we funded that as part of the project. So it should fall under the current rules for rooftop solar. I need to make sure that I'm right about that, but that's my understanding.
Yeah. You don't, as a government agency, don't get any kind of tax rebates anyway. So it's just getting the current rates.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, we just finished up. We're in the process of finishing up a solar study to kind of direct our future look at where we go with rooftop solar or other programs. And one of the things that we can take advantage of that we haven't up until this point is power purchase agreements. where you actually essentially lease the system for a period of time under a fixed or a graduated rate for your power with that company. And then after a period of time, you get the infrastructure. We haven't looked at that up until this point, and given the new rules, that mostly takes advantage of federal tax credits, and that might be one of our futures.
All right. What about the sustainability department? Is it getting the money and support for the programs that it's asked for?
It is. Of course, the council has put in a sustainability plan as well as a climate action plan, and we have been working aggressively at that, mostly on our internal processes as well as support of Summit Community Power Works and the going after the Georgetown Energy Prize. I think we're going to see some shift in that over the next year as Summit Community Power Works gains their nonprofit status and organizes to be an ongoing program within the county. So we'll support that in appropriate ways, but we still got a lot of internal work to do to support the council's sustainability goals.
Yeah. So when you talk about shifting to the funding to SCPW, you're talking about decreasing.
Well, it's not necessarily shifting funding. We have put a lot of staff time into that effort as well. So I think similar to some other work that we do with nonprofits, there might be service agreements related to that. Not really sure what that looks like yet.
All right. Turning to the regular agenda, the council will discuss and possibly approve a new ordinance for special events. The version sets events at levels 1, 2, and 3, also First Amendment events. The staff report refined the definition of filming activities, so it doesn't affect people taking photos or movies at graduation parties.
As well, it exempts. So it has. It defines filming activity as a for-profit business. So any nonprofit type filming that goes on in the community would be exempt from this process as well. It was a question that was asked. It's certainly something that Park City brought up to us, as they have experience with and Salt Lake City, because we asked them as well with some of these activities. And we don't want to limit some of the small business activity that goes on in the community.
All right. So we're basically just trying to be on par with what Park City has as a special events policy.
Absolutely. It makes us more coordinated with Park City, but also brings in a common process for some of these activities and events that we're seeing that might be centered in Park City or in other cities, but bleed out into the unincorporated county.
All right. Also, a consideration of approval for the two transit sales taxes that were approved in November's election, each a quarter of 1%. We've analyzed the local voting results. So maybe just get your reaction to the vote on Proposition 9, which was the transit tax, strongly supported on the west side, also support in South Summit, though not as much as it was over here, and opposed in the North Summit area. Is that because we've kind of excluded them?
Well, it probably in some ways that might be the case. I would bet if we analyzed other tax initiatives or voting patterns, it's fairly consistent. The North Summit area certainly gets to take advantage, as does the rest of the county, with the small municipalities program that's available through that was voted on in Proposition 10 on the infrastructure side. And we do have longer-term plans to bring transit to the North Summit area. This tax proposal, the part of the beauty of it is that it does grow over time as our economy grows. And so as our economy grows, as our county grows, as the North Summit area grows, as the South Summit area grows, we will have revenue available to bring transit services when they are needed in those areas.
And we do know the rail trail goes from here to North Summit. Is there a chance, and is that the fact that it's a state park, does that mean that it's forever forbidden from being another transit route?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. Certainly, we have roadways and highways that also would be used for at least our current way of moving traffic, which is on bus or moving people on buses. If there was a different technology that was available, that's a possibility. I'm not. That's a tough thing to speculate on at this point.
Yeah, and as you mentioned on Prop 10, that's the Transportation and Crash Capital Improvements Tax. It was strongly supported in all regions of the county. Is that people want their potholes fixed? Huh?
Well, I think largely. That's probably what we heard. I think that we're offering something within this at the reaction of the mayors on the east side of the county, who strongly wanted some help with their basic road infrastructure. And that if that's their biggest need, we feel like we've put a program in place, or we'll be putting a program in place through the COG that will address that.
All right, Chapters 3 and 4 of the East County Development Code. A month or so ago, a couple of members of the East County Planning Commission complained that they had sent the council these chapters. The council held a couple of work sessions, and then nothing happened. Now we're getting a reintroduction to them. So what happened in the last couple of months?
So we held a joint meeting with the Eastern Planning Commission in late October. And that discussion between the council and the Planning Commission centered around chapters 3 and 4, what work has been going on since the introduction of chapters 3 and 4 between February and May of this year to the council. The Planning Commission has been working on a couple of tools outside of what was brought forward in chapters 3 and 4, and the council had expressed several times that they wanted to wait to see that those tools before they really contemplated 3 and 4. The Planning Commission did encourage the council to start looking at 3 and 4, and in the encouragement that the Planning Commission would have those tools to them in a timely manner. We're expecting those sometime in mid-December. So this is a reintroduction of 3 and 4 to the council and a start of that discussion.
As we amend the East County Code, apparently there are some allowances where there are certain conditions where applicants could build in geologically hazardous areas and build on ridge lines or slopes over 30%. Is this because we've got platted lots that are already vested?
There are platted lots that do have rights associated with them. So, that's a tough one to deal with. So, we've got not only are they looking at that in chapters 3 and 4, but on the next item, on one of the items on the agenda this week, they're going to be looking at some of those ridgeline standards. Council did ask the Eastern Planning Commission to take a look at that and see where they want to go with that and provide some better direction so that we don't have to come in front of the council for an exception on every one of those that happens. So we'll have some debate on that this week.
All right. A public hearing and possible decision on the Woodward Gorgoza Recreation Facility for additional height up to 45.5 feet. What's the staff recommendation on this?
So the council heard a briefing on this a few weeks ago. I'm not exactly sure when, but the staff's recommendation is that they have complied with all the associated parts of the code that are associated with this, and so staff has recommended approval. But yes, this is a public hearing today, so we will be taking public comment, and it's encouraged that people come out.
Yeah, have you heard from members of the public already?
I think I've seen some things on social media. I specifically have not seen anything on my email, but that doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. And I would bet that council has heard some feedback on this one.
All right. And how did the plows do on its first day out yesterday?
I was just thinking about that as I drove in this morning. I drive on county, city, and state roads coming in. I think everybody did a pretty good job of getting things cleared. I got to probably bring some donuts or maybe some combination for Rich Bulla of healthy food and donuts out to the road and bridge guys and make sure that they know that we appreciate everything they do.
Yeah, I did happen to see a picture, and it said it was a school bus, and it looked like it was kind of. What's the word? High-ended in Pinebrook? Did you happen to hear anything about that?
I didn't hear that one.
Okay. Nope. All right. Anything else, Tom?
Nothing else at this point.
All right. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned. We'll be talking with... It's 8:30 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. The Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow night with a hefty agenda in the studio to preview the agenda. Community Development Director Ann Laurent and Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Ann, you're here to discuss the items on the work session agenda. It sounds like an update on the council's three priorities, critical priorities, affordable housing, transportation, and energy. Anything new here?
That's correct. No, I think the Planning Commission has been wanting this for a long time. Our agendas have been very busy with cases, and we were waiting for Luke Carton to get his feet on the ground working for the city. So between all the progress that Alfred has been working on with the transportation, some of our new housing goals, and Luke, we thought it was a great opportunity to give the Planning Commission an update and listen to them about where they feel the opportunities are to update our land management code.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about affordable housing. Park City Council considering waiving building and impact fees for affordable housing. You're concerned about the impact waiving fees would have on the staff. Are you in support of doing this?
You know, it's a policy decision, and I think the message was clear that we want to do and move forward on promoting affordable housing. From a budgetary perspective, what it does is it's more of a budgetary problem, and it just puts more strain on the general fund because it does come out of our operating, and the money will still be spent in operating costs. But, you know, we do a good job, and we'll take that into consideration as we put our budgets together, and we'll figure it out.
So is it just really a finding a balance? I mean, maybe we just build less affordable housing and pay the fees?
Yeah, The cost to cover our operations are going to be spent either way. So what it is it's just an incentive for when people have affordable housing as part of their projects, they can get their fees waived for the affordable housing portion, as long as it's not an obligation.
All right. But you're not presenting council with one way or the other in terms of what should happen here.
No, I think we're moving forward with the direction that we should waive it.
All right. Transportation, we've got 8,000 employees commuting from outside of Summit County. Staff looking at remote parking lots to help reduce traffic coming into town. Have those sites been identified?
There are some, like Richardson Flats certainly has been identified, but I think a lot of that's going to still be under discussion until the projects are underway. Right now, I think our focus and what Alfred's going to talk a little bit about is the 248 and the 224 projects and dedicated lanes, and we're going to be seeking input on that. You know, certainly I don't claim to be the expert on that, and that's why I've got Alfred there. So
yeah, so we're talking about creating transit priority lanes specifically for 224 and 248?
That is the direction, yeah.
All right, and those would be just what, for carpoolers or buses? Is that the idea?
You know, I don't know all the details of that plan, but that's what we're going to talk about with the Planning Commission is just give them an update on what our plans are and get their feedback.
Yeah, where are we with the county's e-bike grant?
Oh, that's a great question. I think we're in the process of spending it, I don't know. Again, I apologize. I'm mostly representing the housing portion of it and letting Alfred and Luke deal with the other parts. But I know we've identified areas where we'd like to put them, and I know we're at the city. We've purchased some, and we're using them, and we're enjoying them.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about back to housing then, because we're running a story from one of those who has her name on one of the Park City Heights houses, and she has since, thinking that she was moving into a house, sold her other house, now living in an apartment. What's going on there?
So where we are is that the city is waiting for Ivory Homes to submit pricing. They did submit pricing beginning in November. They withdrew and want to rethink. And what they have told us is they want to request of the Housing Authority, which is City Council, to amend their development agreement. And we have not seen what that amendment might look like at this time.
My understanding is that they're hoping to get a little bit more for the units, huh?
They're trying to figure out their balance of affordable pricing, and what they submitted did not meet all of the criteria of the housing resolution. So what they come back with, I really don't know what they're going to propose.
So in the meantime, no construction. I mean, it's there's nothing going on there.
So they have constructed, and they have some certificate of occupancies, but they have not sold the units. They've contacted folks and we're going to move forward, and then they've sort of put it back on delay again.
Yeah, but the ones that have been built and been sitting there empty since June, that's it. I mean, I don't see any other new construction.
Correct, and I think that's because they're trying to get their pricing in order.
Okay. Energy, Park City, of course, has its net zero goals. Rocky Mountain Power now trying to recoup their possible losses with rooftop solar. How does the city plan on dealing with that?
Oh, goodness. I might look to Bruce a little bit on that one. But
So go ahead and separate the two. Right now, what you're seeing is the next step of all three of those critical council goals, where we're moving from discussion and policy phase into implementation. What Ann and Luke and Alfred and Rhoda and I are doing is looking for specific changes in the land management code to implement these, and general plan to implement these policies the city council has gotten us. We'll talk a little bit more about solar in a second, but you're really seeing the next step of our obligation to deliver. We had this conversation with the Planning Commission about 4 months ago, 5 months ago now. We're prepared to move forward. As your question about where remote parking is going to go, that's part of our upcoming general plan discussion about where housing is going to go and where parking, remote parking, is going to go. And we're going to update those sections, or at least attach things on general plan for that, and then we'll implement through the land management code.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, if it's not Rocky Mountain Power, then it's city code, because we have an Old Town resident, Tina Smith, who lives in the HR zone. And,
right.
And apparently solar panels not allowed in that historic residential zone, which it seems to contradict.
Absolutely incorrect. That is the least correct bit of information that's out there in the rumor mill right now. Solar panels are allowed. They've been allowed in that district since 2009. The specific clause that the problem here is that Rocky Mountain Power is not considering her to meet the incentive criteria, because the panels where they would be located don't generate enough power. So the failure is primarily with the incentive program and not our policy since 2009 or the historic district guidelines from 1988. So I want to clear that up for the public. We're not opposed to solar. We just need to make sure it goes in the right location. And the question to the public is, what are you willing to give up in order to implement? We also know from our conversations with sustainability that co-location of solar is considerably more efficient than individual solar locations. And so folks that have sort of these locations that aren't necessarily 100% efficient are probably better off ecologically going to co-location. And so part of our work with sustainability is to find a location if we can do co-location for solar.
So apparently, I mean, what we've heard from Tina is that you've actually walked her through some kind of appeal process to appeal to Rocky Mountain or appeal.
Okay, there's two parts of this. The city has an appeal process of a formal determination that I would make. Since she has not made a formal application, just a preliminary discussion, I don't have anything to make a determination on. So she, you know, there's
determine what though? That's where
whether
I'm
the solar panels can be located where she wants them to be, and whether it's in conformance with the code or not. And we're saying the villain here is not our land management code and our historic district guidelines. The villain here is the incentive program and the way Rocky Mountain structured it. It's very, very similar to another process we just went through with the city, where the state came down with some regulations with respect to wildland fire interface without considering the implications in the historic district. So we believe it is settled policy that the historic district is the historic district, and we, in terms of that 49-51% balance, we have to opt towards protecting the historic district.
So are you telling me that solar panels, though, are allowed anywhere in town?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are four or five sections in the land management code and the historic districts that do that. And we've had panels all over town since 2009.
Okay, let's move on. Bonanza Park East, this is Mark Fisher's project, not the city's idea of purchasing the property.
That's
next
correct.
To that. We're talking, I think, nine businesses, including the Kimball Arts Center, Anaya's Market, Silver King Coffee, the medical clinic, basically all slated for demolition. So what happens to those places? Do we see what happens to, like, what we saw with White Pine Touring, where they move from one side of the street to the other?
I hope so. And you'll see that policy discussion if you look at the work that Francisco Astorga has done. We talk a lot about gentrification and redevelopment, and the implications for local businesses when redevelopment comes in order to accommodate a larger facility. So you'll see that the applicant is representing that they're trying to bring two large arts organizations into that district, which replaces local small businesses with larger arts organizations, which is a gentrification act. We can argue the rights or wrongs of that act, but that's what's going to happen. As I look to the future, I believe the Prospector area is an excellent candidate for those local businesses. They've got a great walking mall. They're moving forward with a plan to redevelop. We have two fronts, zero lot line stuff in Prospector. So hopefully the Bonanza Park will find a location for some of those. I'm particularly worried about the gas station because that goes away.
You're worried because there won't be a gas station, or because of just the environmental issues?
No. That there won't. I would look pretty foolish if I said there's only going to be one gas station in town. Yeah. So
in terms of Bonanza Park, basically, that's capitalism, right? It's like, even though these businesses are there now, likely because of the lower rent,
right?
That's just the way the world works.
If you're a free market person, and I kind of trend that way, that this is part of the invisible hand of capitalism that's moving these around. But I do believe I have an obligation to the general plan to find another location. And so my team and Ann's team has been working together to fix these larger policy issues and make sure we have places for everybody to go. We do not want to negatively affect the recycle center. We don't want to negatively affect the local market for Anaya's or the gas station or the medical clinic.
Staff says the development does comply with Park City's general plan and the purpose statements of the general code. So what's next with this then?
Okay, this is a pre-application. It does not vest any development rights other than what the underlying zoning is. So nothing about height, nothing about square footage, nothing about underground parking. None of those elements are vested. All we're doing is looking to see if we can find general compliance with the goals and objectives of the general plan, and it generally complies. I think the big issue that we were trying to solve on this one was transportation and circulation. The original MPD pre-application that was brought in had five or six entrances into this area off of Kearns Boulevard. There are seven or eight or nine out there right now, so it had some reduction. Alfred and Francisco have reduced it with the applicant down to two now, and two off of Bonanza. So all of a sudden the circulation starts to work. All of the good work that Alfred is putting together starts to work with this site. So that was the crux matter at this point.
All right. So people who are concerned about Bonanza Park, the height, the square footage, the transit issues, that they will have lots more time to
deal with. This is going to be a full MPD process, and I think we're going to have to decide what height is worth in protecting, and we're going to have to decide what we're going to tell our children 25 years from now when they ask us, how could we let this happen?
All right. Real quick, just wanted to recognize you and congratulate you on the Utah Philanthropy Day Heart and Hands Award, basically for all your volunteer work at Recycle Utah.
And at the Glenwood, but yes, it was nominated by Recycle Utah, and thank you very much to INSA and Molly for putting that together. Thank you to Ann for scamming me into going. She didn't tell me. She just scheduled an appointment for me.
All right. Yeah, so this happened last week. And you've been with Recycle Utah for how many years?
Oh, standing outside in the cold for a decade, on the board for 5 years probably.
Great. Well, congratulations.
Thanks
for coming in.
Thank you.
And Laurent and Bruce Erickson. KPCW News, time now, 8:43. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. In the studio with a preview, President and General Manager of Deer Valley, Bob Wheaton. Good morning, Bob.
Morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So you're going to open up with how much terrain, or remains to be seen?
Yes, it does remain to be seen. It's been a little ironic because this last week, Friday, we had a big get-together, if you will, with snowmaking and grooming and ski patrol and all that. And, we're all gathered around, what's it looking like? And what do you think we can open? And then the storm came in, and I had another discussion yesterday, which was quite different from the one that we had on Friday. So it's encouraging, and with the weather pattern, as you just mentioned, we're going to be running hard and making a lot of snow. We got a lot out of this storm. So we're out track packing every single thing that we can right now. So it's looking good.
Yeah. So do you ever get nervous, or do you just know that we're going to have the snow or the cold temperatures by the first weekend in December?
You know, it always comes, and, you know, every year is a little bit different. Like I said, it always comes, and we're always there, and skiing's always good. So,
all right, lots of work, I think, on your snowmaking system this summer. Really, kind of like you say, the unsexy stuff.
But it should
make some great improvements, or just save you some water and energy, I'm guessing, huh?
All the above, and we're now able to make even more snow than we have in the past in the same period of time. So, that is really beneficial. Like in little windows that we have. Right now, for the next 48 hours, 72 hours, we're going to be running hard 24/7. So it really makes a difference.
Yeah. Any improvements, though, that the skiing public is going to notice?
Well, hopefully the snow, with the snowmaking. And we had, if you remember, latter part of February, we had a little wind event in town. And all the lifts shut down, and it was dramatic, 100 plus mile an hour winds, and we lost a lot of trees on the mountain. And we spent the summer gathering all that up and repurposing all the wood. And it's almost ironic, but it really opens up a lot of great glade skiing and tree skiing, and so people are really going to notice a difference when they come out. And they go, oh, I never saw that before. Oh, look it over there. Oh, yeah. And it's literally all over the mountain. So we spent a lot of time and a lot of effort this summer, as I said. It's going to make a dramatic improvement in the off-piste skiing.
Okay. As I mentioned, Celebrity Ski Fest coming back to kind of opening day. We've got Robert Kennedy coming back as well for his Waterkeepers Alliance benefit.
Correct. 25th Celebrity Ski Fest. I can't believe it. Still remember the first one, but so we're excited. It's always been a great kickoff to the ski season, and we're really looking forward to that. It's great exposure for everybody in town, and especially with the fresh coat of white, we can put those narrow lenses back in the box on the TV cameras, and so a lot of panning goes on, and it's televised on CBS for an hour right after the football game. So it's huge exposure. It's pre-Christmas exposure, and really helps everybody in town, I think.
Well, and also just all of the publicity about the pipeline in North Dakota that Robert Kennedy has been a big part of here recently. So
correct. And that's the other part of it. The benefit for Waterkeepers is over the top with this event, both financially and from a national exposure standpoint. And it's a great group. They do great work, certainly well-focused and well-organized, and we're proud to be a partner with them.
Congratulations on the World Ski Award, the best ski resort in the U.S. 4 years running now. So how does pair with the Ski Magazine Award? I mean, they're different, but...
They're different. They're all nice. We tend to do pretty well in that arena, both in the Ski Magazine thing and the World Ski Awards. And we just feel very gracious that we're accepted at that level in the ski community. And it's fun. It's fun. But, that, you know, those awards too, Leslie, I think, while it's really a lot of fun that they're focused on Deer Valley, I would like to think that when we go and accept those awards, that we accept them on behalf of the town, because it really does take a town to be able to achieve that level of acceptance worldwide.
What do early reservations look like?
Outstanding. It's almost like, what are we going to do if all these people really show up? Reservations are up double digits. And the encouraging thing, too, Leslie, is it's not just for a short period of time. Those reservations are spread out throughout the entire ski season. Buckle up, because here we go.
Yeah, not just Christmas and Presidents, but
yeah, exactly.
through March.
I mean,
huh?
Through April. So it's really, when we started seeing those numbers come in, you know, your eyes get a little wide and you go, really? Or, you know, we missing something here? How's that report? You know, and but we went back and analyzed everything, and it's all correct. So here we go.
Well, something also new this season is that you're going to be doing without Chuck English, who has retired. I mean, he's been there, I think, as long as you, yeah?
Yes. Chuck actually started a little bit before I did. That was 36 years ago. And I just got off the phone with Chuck just before we came in here. And I'm going to miss him personally and professionally. But, you know, there's a time when the timing's right. And this is one of those. And, you know, Chuck's fingerprints and footprints are literally all over Deer Valley. And we're going to miss him. He's not going anywhere. He's going to be still here in town and take some time and enjoy his granddaughter and step back a little bit.
Yeah. So who takes his place?
Yet to be determined. Hopefully we'll have, we're going through an internal interview process right now, Leslie, and we'll probably make that choice and that announcement here in the next little bit.
All right. And where are we with the expansion plans into Wasatch County?
Moving right along. It's probably chat on that project a couple times a week now. And purchase agreements are going along well. It's really making its way through Wasatch County in the approval process. And as the plans get more defined and redefined over there, the more encouraging it is. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
Very excited, actually.
Do you have a timeline on it at all?
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some movement over there this coming summer. So it's starting to rock and roll. It's definitely, you know, it's a big project. I mean, it's a really big deal. So it's going to have a, you know, 20-year build-out. So this is not just a flash in the pan kind of thing. So that's what's encouraging is that everybody realizes that. And we're all taking our time and doing some good planning and really being diligent about the process.
Have we given up on the idea of a gondola from Old Town to somewhere in Deer Valley?
Given up is maybe a little bit strong, but not actively pursuing that right now. Alignments were tough. Funding was probably the toughest part. Once we got the price tag about what we were talking about, it's like, holy smokes, now how are we going to pay for this?
Yeah, what were we talking about?
So that was a little tough, $25 million. It was a little steep for our little deal. So, and on that deal, Leslie, I got to say that the partnership that we saw with the city and the city staff was absolutely incredible and is absolutely incredible. And the support that we've seen. And I just want to say thanks to everybody on city staff for that. It's been great.
Okay. Bob, anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so. It's, you know, we got a couple feet of snow just out of this last little push, and weather forecast looks really good, as you just said. And so we're humming. We're ready. We're excited. So bring it on, and let's get out there and go skiing.
Okay. Bob Wheaton, President, General Manager of Deer Valley. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now at 8:54. Well, the Ballet West Park City Academy presents its annual production of The Nutcracker Saturday, December 11th. There'll be two performances. In the studio with me, I have Katie Snarr. She's the rehearsal mistress for the Nutcracker Children. Good morning, Katie.
Hi.
So you're working in the Park City at the Park City campus?
I am. I am the principal at the Park City campus, so I am working with all the kids there.
Okay. So this is a production that we here have seen many years, done through Park City Dance, which has basically been folded into the Ballet West Academy.
True.
So we should expect something similar then?
You should expect. This will be the final year of this production of That Nutcracker. And so we are really excited. It's been going on for 15 years. And some of the students that we have right now have been there 14 years. This is their 14th Nutcracker. So this really is, to them, something that's really, really special. And we are really excited to host this Nutcracker.
Yeah. So when you say the final one, plans not to do it again, huh?
Well, being folded into Ballet West, because Ballet West Company has the longest running Nutcracker in the nation, in the Americas, we decided not to compete too much with that. We are going to start a flagship brand new production next year. That will be The Magic of the Polar Express, but we will finish this year with something really wonderful and historic here in Park City.
Okay. How many kids do you have participating in?
We have about 100, over 100, a little over 100. And they've been practicing. They've had been for about eight weeks. So they're really ready and excited.
Okay. So as I mentioned, two performances. This is happening Saturday, December 11th at the Park City Eccles Center.
It's Sunday.
Oh, excuse me. Sunday the 11th. Yes, I did know that. So 2:30 or what is it? 2 and 5:30?
2 and 5:30. And there's still tickets available, but they're on 22ticks.
Okay. So just 22ticks.com?
22ticks.com, or you can go to the Ballet West Academy website and click on the Park City link, and all the information is there as well.
Okay. Will there be other public performances, though, here locally? I mean, I think that's what was so nice about this production. It was an opportunity to see the local dancers here locally.
Yep. And we are dancing this Saturday at a care center in Heber. And then on Tuesday, December 6th, we're visiting four local elementary schools. So the kids in the community will have a chance to watch their friends from the community do that. And that is a piece that will continue, even though the production will change. That element will continue within the community.
All right. Can you give me a sneak preview, though, of what's going to happen when you say you're going to mix next year's production at the Capitol Theater with...
Next year's production at the Capitol Theater will stay. It's brand... Ballet West is putting on a new Nutcracker. But up here in Park City, we'll use the local kids and still do a performance. It just won't be a Nutcracker suite.
Okay, I see. So there'll still be a holiday performance.
There will be a holiday performance that we are creating unique to the kids that are up here. And we're really excited because we've already started work on it.
Okay, and you said the Polar Express.
So the Magic of the Polar Express.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, anything else you'd like to let us know?
No, there's still some tickets available for this year's Nutcracker, and we'd love to see you there.
Okay. Hey, Katie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Katie's.